Welcome to MP City Chat Podcast. I'm Suzanne Brooke, and we're here today talking about some hot topics in the city with City Manager Ed Thatcher. Hello and welcome.
Hello, it's good to be here.
Well, let's dive right into some questions we're hearing in the community. First up, let's talk about employment and jobs and careers in local government. There are a lot of opportunities, so tell us a little bit about why you think a career in government is good.
Oh my goodness, I've been doing this over 40 years. Many administrators in city government will do it for a while and then go into the private sector and try that. But I've enjoyed what I do. City government is the closest government to the people that exists in the whole world. So what we do affects people's lives for good or otherwise on an everyday basis. It's an interesting question here in Mount Pleasant because we are a smaller city. We're what we call a full service city. We have all of the services that a city needs. For example, we have street maintenance. We have water treatment and water distribution. And we have wastewater collection and treatment. We have three cemeteries. We have several parks. And we have a full-service library, of course, fire and police. But we have all the elements a city needs, even though we're not a great big city. In the Metroplex, for example, cities get together and they share libraries or they'll share this or that. But here in these small standalone cities, we become what they call a full-service city. So there's a lot of opportunities for people to work, all the way from jobs starting out where you can start out with a high school education and learn the field and get certification. Probably the biggest challenge we have in this city is hiring the department level professionals that need to know how to do what they do in a government setting rather than the private setting. It's something that we need people who have experience to hire. When we hire those, we have to look outside the city. Unless there's somebody inside we can promote that's been here for a while, we have to look outside the city and try to recruit people from outside to come to Mount Pleasant. So the salaries have to be equivalent to some of those in the Metroplex in order to entice them to come. What we realize, we need to hire people who want to be here and come here to live here, not just necessarily for the job, but for the whole family experience here. I know there's a lot of folks in town that cry out, why don't you hire people from here for these positions? It comes down to whether they have experience or skill set that we need or the education that they need. And so what we've developed here is like a mentorship program, where I've looked out to find people who maybe have retired and are excellent in their field, professionals in their field, experts in their field, to come here and not only help us, but in the time that they're here, to find somebody that's from here or that's already working for us that we can put in position and mentor them and train them over a year or two so that when this person that has come here to help us for a year or two leaves, we have somebody in place. I know that we hired a city planner. We had never had one who had retired. I'd worked with him in years before, had him come out and help us with some big developments and with some of the standards that we had here. His job was to find his replacement before he left, which he did, Mr. David Gonzalez. We didn't have the HR function really working well here in the city. And I asked a lady who was the HR director in Rockwall. She retired and lives about an hour east of here. And asked her to come. And she came for 2 or 3 days a week as a consultant for a year and a little over a year and 3 months, I think. And her whole purpose was to help us get processes in place, but to also find somebody that we could put in place as the HR director. And during that time, we identified our current HR director, which is Perla Ayala. She lives here in the town with her family. She'd worked in the medical profession and was the hospitals looking to hire her, my friend Terry Scroggins. And she was working on a master's degree, and she'd done some HR work. We hired her in July of 2022, and she finished her master's degree in at the end of December of 2022. That's when Cheryl left, and Perla worked a few months with her, but then became our HR director. She's doing a really professionally well job. She's well thought of among her colleagues and also the employees. They feel comfortable coming and talking to her. It was a home run.
It was. And so you have some other situations where you've taken that creative approach.
Yeah, we had a man that's worked here, Keith Boyd, worked here for a lot of years, 30 years or so. Was thinking about retiring when I interviewed him after I came and found out that he has an associate's degree in accounting. and he was over the street department. And I promoted him to be public works director, talked him out of retirement, asked him to stay and train some people. So he's taken that job as public works director and has done a really great job. I mean, whatever he handles his job, whatever we need, he does. And he is bringing somebody along to help take that job when he leaves. Also, we have a library. That's another one of the full service functions of a city is to have a library. We had Helen Thompson that was here for a number of years, who was a master librarian. And I got to tell you, in my experience in Texas, in small cities, it's unusual to have somebody that's a master librarian. They might have a bachelor's degree or no degree, but loves books, and they become the librarian. But she had a master's degree in library science. And you could tell by the programs and things she's done for our library and the staff she's put together, tremendous. And she retired this last January. We promoted a young lady who came to work for us a few years ago. Her name's Lupi Herrera. Lupi finished her master's in library science December of 23. So we promoted her into this master librarian's position. And she's from here. She lives in Mount Vernon, but she's from here, went to school here.
And she's bilingual.
Oh, she's bilingual, yes. We've already have benefited from her expertise and knowledge and education. So those kinds of hirings become, again, home runs because they're from here. They're going to stay here. They're not looking to move to bigger cities. They're going to spend the rest of their career here. That's what we're aiming for. We've struggled in the finance department. Again, those jobs all over the Metroplex, all over the state, hard to find finance directors that are really well qualified that'll come and move and work for you. We found a lady that I used to work with, Laurie Mays, who actually lives in Leonard, and she agreed after retirement to come and spend a year or two to help us find somebody and train them, as well as helping us in the interim, but then training somebody as she goes along. In her department, we have a degreed accountants. She has a young lady named Elaine Rowe that we've just promoted, given her the title of assistant finance director. Her job will be to work closely with Lori, and so she'll help us put our budget together. She'll learn about investing revenues we have and the accounting aspect of everything, how to keep track of everything. She'll work on the audit, how to close out a year and begin a new year and work with the auditors to get the audit done. And the goal is to have them work with Lori for as long as she will be here and take Elaine through a couple of budgets and actually train her how to do that. So even though we've hired those people, we know they're not going to be here long, and their goal is to bring somebody from here, put them in position, train them, mentor them, and then move on. With the idea that even after they're gone, they can maybe call them and ask them questions. But those kinds of situations are what really has, we felt, worked well here. And that's what we're doing in the finance department now. Also, we hired Ricky Harris as the Parks and Rec director back in 2020. And he really hit the ground running. He's from Commerce. He'd been like an assistant Parks and Rec director in Rowlett for a few years. He's working in Greenville when we found him. And he came here, started trimming trees in the parks and cleaning up and repairing and replacing equipment that we'd had for 20, 30 years that hadn't been replaced. Everybody noticed what he was doing. They could see what he was doing and how good it was. And he's done real well. He's very smart. He's got a bachelor's degree, and he's taken on more and more responsibilities as I've needed some help. We recently promoted him to be assistant city manager so he could take on a lot of things. I'm in meetings. I need to be doing some work. So to split up some of this work and give him some of that accountability and responsibility, it's been very helpful. Our directors have been very helpful in doing that. Some of them report now to him directly, and he keeps me in the loop. So that's been very helpful. Again, he's from this area and loves this area. And we know we can't guarantee people are going to stay forever, but finding the people that like the area and want to be here is very crucial in finding those key positions, the professional positions that want to be here.
There's balance. And so if they have their families already here, they're going to be that much more dedicated to the city because Absolutely. They're serving their community.
Yes. Candace Webster, when we hired her, she worked for Pilgrims out here, was a professional executive assistant. We hired her and she worked for me for that for a year or so. And then we promoted her to be a city secretary. She really is the first person that we've had in this position in the history of Mount Pleasant to become a certified city secretary. takes 2 years to get that certification, going to classes and passing tests. And she got that certification right at 2 years. We have another young lady that works here, Annie Trout, who has a 4-year degree, by the way. She worked at the court, and we brought her in to help manage our office. She gives support to Candace and to the HR director, Perla, and to me. And we've also asked her to get certification. She's about a year and a half into her certification of city secretary, so she can actually fill in when Candace isn't here, not able to be here, and can give her help there. So finding that redundancy in the profession, the jobs we have, will help us keep things covered. And these people are all from here and want to stay here, and they don't have any feelings that they want to move away. So that's been very good.
So the city, particularly the Streets and Public Works Department, do a lot of work around town that many may not know about. What exactly is the city's role in maintaining property throughout town, including the right-of-way?
I really appreciate asking that question, because that seems to be an issue now. Back when I first came, we had questions about what our right-of-ways, for example. If you look at TxDOT down on Ferguson in front of Walgreens, that's technically the state right-of-way there. But this city has decided that we're going to maintain that area and mow it. I think we have some median roses out there on Ferguson and around the intersection of 271 and 49. The city decided we want that to look better. TxDOT will mow it once or twice a year during the summer, and it just grows up. So we've maintained that to make it look better. And so all over the city, we have usually 10 to 15 feet right away behind the curb, or if you don't have a curb, the ditch, the little swell by the road, and a little bit up in the yard is city right away. I remember when I came, I asked the question of the staff that was here, what is usually our right away? What is the distance from the pavement into the yards? And the people here said, we don't have right-of-way in the city of Mount Pleasant. And I said, well, we've got fire hydrants along the roads and water lines in there, sewer lines and electric lines. And we have those phone pedestals all over. That's got to set in an easement or right-of-way if it runs along the road. And if it's a city street, then it's city right-of-way. If it's TxDOT, then it's TxDOT. So they took a pretty hard line. I say they, the last administration, and they said it's up to everybody to take care of their right-of-way right up to the pavement. But you get out on the edges of town where you have unimproved property or big pastures or whatever. Not everybody comes outside the fence and does between the fence and the road. Or they'll have rows of trees that are in our right-of-way. I've always thought it works out. If the tree is alive, then the property owner says it's ours. But when it dies, they'll call you and say, come get your dead tree, kind of thing. And what we've experienced here since I've been here is a lot of weather events. High winds and rain, mostly. We had the winter event in 21. But those events have caused some of these big trees to fall or limbs to fall, and they'll rip out power lines and so forth. Even the smallest thing is having trees growing too close to the road. It sucks the moisture out from under the pavement, cause the road to fail. They have limbs hanging over into the trees, and so you can't get a fire truck down the road. You know, we're a service business. We're a city government. We take care of the needs of our citizens. So we will go talk to people. If they have a green tree that's got limbs in the road, normally we talk to them and say, do you want to trim them back yourself? Because if you don't, we will. We don't threaten them with court to do it. We just say, we'll do it. A lot of them will let us do it. And we have a machine that's on a long arm on a tractor that we just turn up, and we'll drive down the road and cut the limbs off. And then we'll come back and clean the limbs up. If we have right-of-ways where we have water lines and sewer lines, we have phone pedestals and electric lines, we try to take the trees out so that they don't create a problem. And we've taken that responsibility to do that. We've had some questions of, shouldn't the property owners do that? And the answer is yes, if they will. And if they don't, we need to help. The reason we say that is because we've had some weather events where trees have fallen along different streets and have taken out the electric lines. So SWEPCO will come in and cut the trees away from them. They don't cut them down, but they'll trim them out and then put the lines back up. And when we see that there's a tree like that large tree growing in an easement, we'll contact the people and say that tree needs to come out, and we give them the option, but most of them will say we'll take it out. So we do, so that we can not have that issue in the future. We had an event, Juneteenth event in 2023, where we had a large windstorm, rainstorm, hailstorm. We lost big trees all over this county and maybe other counties, several counties around us. A lot of them here in town, we were without electricity 2 or 3 days. I know our electric company was trying to get the electricity restored. They were in the easements and cutting trees and limbs and letting them fall into the right-of-way. And then they were moving on down. We had a tree cutting group doing it. Then we had people coming behind them trying to get the electricity going. An eager beaver in our code enforcement sent a letter to SWEPCO before we even had electricity on, like the second day into it, said, you have so many days to clean up or we'll have to send you to court kind of thing. An administrator SWEPCO called me from Texarkana and said, what's this letter I got? And I said, well, I'm not aware of it, but don't worry about it. Please get our electricity going. And then we went and had a talk with them and said, look, we have got to get the electricity on. We don't need to tell SWEPCO. They got to pick up after themselves. In fact, we created 2 cleanup crews in our city, street and utility workers. One crew on one side of town, one had another route on another side of town, and they just went through the town, cutting trees in the road and picking them up. We told people if they had fallen trees on their property, if they would cut them and move them to the edge of the curb or move them to the ditch, we'll pick them up. We didn't charge for this, but we felt like it was an emergency. We need to get the electricity on and we need to pick up the trees. We put it out there. We're going to run it till we get as much as we can. And we did it for about 2 weeks. And we kept going back through, and we went through town 3 or 4 times until they didn't show up anymore. And people were bringing trees from everywhere. And we understand we may have gotten some from the county, but we got trees cleaned up in town. I remember driving through other communities, Winsboro and others around, and those trees and limbs stayed in their streets and in their yards for months and months. But ours were cleaned up within a couple of weeks. And we do that because that's what we do as a city public service, is to take care of our customers. Now, we can't haul their limbs for nothing forever, but when we have these kind of high event, harsh event things, then we do that. And some people may say, like the gentleman I had, this employee that wrote a letter to SWEPCO, you can't do that. You got to pick them up right away. Just creates more trouble when there's already trouble. What we want to do is make it less hard on people than
and that's what your crew does so well.
And then we go around city. I say we go around the city and look for those situations. Right now I can visualize a tree, a great big old tree, big large limbs hanging out over the street. Tree is dead. And we've had to cut limbs off of before, but that whole tree one of these days is going to fall into the street or a big limb fall off. I look at these big trees hanging over the streets, and I think if one of those limbs fell down and happened to hit a vehicle,
so it's a matter of not just keeping things looking good, but keeping things
safe.
It's about, and also keeping the utilities that people take for granted working.
Absolutely.
And speaking of taking for granted water, water is a big deal in every community, but Mount Pleasant is in a pretty good situation.
Absolutely. Before I got here, we had a few 8,000 acre feet out of Bob Sandlin, but we had just purchased about $1 million in addition. I think we have about 33,500 acre feet of water out of Bob Sandlin. That's a lot of water. I think we're using somewhere around 10 or 12,000 acre feet of water there. So we have lots of water for industry that want to come. We produce a lot of water for a city our size. We use for the city and the citizens about 1.8 million gallons a day. And then we sell water wholesale to Tri-Sud Water District, and they use about 1.7 million gallons a day. Then we have the big industry, Pilgrims. It's a food processing, meat processing, a chicken plant. They use 4 million gallons a day.
Wow.
And so for a city our size, we produce a lot of water. And so we have all the water we need and the pumping capacity. We have 2 water treatment plants. For a city that's 17,000 people, usually you have a little plant that'll put out 10 million gallons a day, and that's what you use. But here, because of our wholesale customers and Pilgrims, we have 2, one on the south side, one on the north side, and we can treat and put out 15 to 16, 17 million gallons a day. We have a relationship, a contract with Tri-Sud, and that's the county. It's actually 3 counties. We provide them water. And we had a situation where their facilities weren't big enough to receive all the water they needed. We had to keep 60 PSI of pressure on the edge of our city limits so they would have pressure in their district. So we've talked to them and asked them to update their facility where they have their own holding tanks and storage tanks and large enough to take the water. They have a contract with us to provide 5.5 million gallons a day of water. And so we've just asked them to have the facilities to receive it and then to pump it to their own customers. So we're not doing that. So that's an issue. I know that there's another issue. The cost of our water is basically that. In other words, we buy our raw water. It's 33,000 acre feet of water we have access to, but we pay for that. We pay to treat it. We have to build treatment plants that cost lots of money, many millions of dollars. And then we have people there that treat it, that run the plants. We distribute it. We have people that take care of the lines to distribute to people's homes and read meters and so forth. So all of that costs lots of money. And our cost, we sell the water at a rate that pays for our debt that we've had to build the facilities and to maintain them, pay for the water cost of buying the raw water and pay for the treatment of it, and then the distribution and maintenance. And so every year we have to look at the cost. Recently, year before this year, we had a increased cost for raw water of about $400,000, a little more than $400,000. And that didn't get worked into the rates that first year. But this last year, when we did the audit, found out our rates weren't covering everything, we realized it was because we never did work that $400,000 into the rates. When our rate goes up for raw water, the rates to the customers have to go up. It was a one-time cost. I mean, they didn't charge it to us this last year. So this next year, we'll relook at the rates at what the actual cost is and expect for that rate to go back down for the customers. We did notice that it went down, but it didn't go down $400,000. It went up $400,000 or some thousand. It didn't quite go down that. But we'll work that into the rate mix, and then this fall, we'll reset the rates based on what our costs are. Somebody mentioned the other day at our council meeting, you raised the rates, yet it was just a one-time thing. Well, that one-time thing was significant enough that we had to work that into the rates for a year, and then we'll work it back out again. And so they can expect those rates to be adjusted this coming fall.
Well, that's a good explanation. Thank you. Thank you again for being here today. I know your schedule is just jam-packed, and we appreciate you taking time to speak to the citizens. I think that we're getting good feedback. They like to hear from you, so we'll do this more.
Thank you, Suzanne. Let me just tell you that this is an opportunity we don't get very often to be able to answer some questions in a timely way, and I really think this is a good opportunity to do that, and I appreciate your help.
You're welcome, and we will keep it up. Remember, you can hear all the episodes at mpcity.net.